Case number 11-3003, United States of America versus Madhada Asagal Haithi, also known as Hada Haithi, also known as Usted Madhada, also known as Abdullah Aziz, also known as Commander Haithi, also known as Haithi, appellant. Ms. Lampley for the appellant, Ms. Cole for the appellee.
Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honor. For the record, Diane Lampley on behalf of Mr. Haithi. The issue presented to this court this morning is the applicability and analysis of the sentencing enhancement for terrorism, which results under the guidelines of an increase of 12 levels on the offense scale and an automatic jump to Category 6 on the criminal history category scale. In Mr. Haithi's situation, he went from a criminal history category of 1 to a criminal history category of 6, as he was a first-time offender. When looking at this issue, as with most in criminal law, I would suggest that it is useful to first look at the indictment. In this case, Mr. Haithi was charged with multiple counts of hostage taking. There was no terrorist charge included in the indictment. There was no language in the indictment which attempted to create a nexus between the acts of violence towards the people and the organization to which Mr. Haithi was a member. This is contrary to many of the cases of which were chiefly relied upon by the government, in that most of those cases involved indictments where there was a count of material support to a terrorist organization, or I believe Judge Catelli had one where there was a narco-terrorism count. The Garley case, which has been cited too, the facts were that the appellant in that case asked for money to make him stop making bomb threats to bomb public buildings. So in all of the cases that have been relied upon, there has been this nexus between the act of violence and the terror and the terrorist act, if you will. Because this was a case where there was no trial, and in fact there was a guilty plea, the next document which, or the next two documents which would typically might provide support would be the plea agreement itself and the proffer, neither of which, as is true of the indictment, attempted to create a nexus factually in either document between the act of violence and the terrorist organization, which the government itself has designated, not Mr. Haithi designating himself to be a terrorist. So when this case, when the argument was presented to Chief Judge Roberts, whether he, and he did choose the 95 language, by the way, not the 96. Whether he would have chosen either one of them, frankly, in our view, really makes not a lot of difference, because there has to be, under either of those definitions, there has to be a connection to government. It isn't like the people who kidnapped the individuals in the recreation park in this case selected, for example, people from the country of Philippines or American citizens. This was a very random event, if you will, in terms of the selection of the victims. And as such, I would say that the government has a difficult time showing the nexus. Now, the attempt is...
How do you deal with the agreement with the mayor to release hostages or see the full payment on condition that the government take specific actions? That seems to fit the definition pretty well.
My view is that the government connection during the ransom negotiation period was really an attempt to negotiate the ransom itself, with the exception of them asking for
a specific condition. Right? It wasn't just tagging over dollars.
I'm sorry?
it wasn't just haggling over dollars. It was a specific change of government activity that was sought.
What was sought, I believe, if I recall correctly, was the addition of schools for Muslims, the addition of hiring of Muslims.
A change of government behavior.
Well, I would suggest...
Let's assume it was all the changes would have been for the good.
I would argue, Your Honor, that that's insufficient. That's an insufficient nexus in terms of the language in 95 is to influence the policy of government by intimidation or coercion, affect conduct of government by assassination or kidnapping, intimidate or coerce a civilian population.
Well, I would say like that... Little Roman 2, mm-hmm. Influence the policy of the government by intimidation or coercion. It seems to be the fifth day deal with the mayor like a glove.
I think you can separate the two. I think you can separate the desire of Mr. Hyphy to have Muslims have a better living situation. I think we see it all the time. Now, granted, it's
well, this
not.
This doesn't say influence the policy of a government in an unwise direction or anything like that. It's just influence the policy of a government.
Well, obviously, we see situations all the time where people are trying to influence the policy of government. The problem is how they do it.
Not normally by hostage taking.
I grant you that, Your Honor. If you rule that that is an appropriate nexus, then of course it's.
How could we avoid ruling that it is?
Pardon?
How could we avoid ruling that it is?
Because I don't believe that, I think you can separate the government activities from the kidnapping. I don't think the two necessarily fit together. And I think that wanting the government to treat you and others like you in a better way is not necessarily a terror activity. Now, the crime of violence, I guess my argument would be that the crime of violence and terrorism certainly are not synonymous. And I think there's a real tendency to assume that because people have been treated violently, that that also means that there has been a terror activity. In reading the record, the government attempted to bring this nexus by putting in the proffer the fact that Mr. Hyphy was a member of an organization which the United States government had designated to be a terrorist organization. But they didn't put any facts in there other than the facts that go into the violent actions taken on the mountain in terms of the victims. They merely pointed to his membership and leadership in that organization. And in fact, when Chief Judge Roberts made his ruling ultimately, it was that, along with a proffer from an affidavit from one of the victims saying that at some point on the mountain, they had been referred to as quote unquote oppressed, which I would suggest language to that effect certainly shouldn't be sufficient. Finally, what's troubling, it seems to me, is the fact that really we don't get to any of these facts in any sort of litigation way until the sentencing stage. There's only the mention of his membership in the proffer. In fact, I would suggest that there's a real attempt to limit any of this nexus in terms of the proffer, because as we know from reading the sentencing transcript, Mr. Hyphy actually was helping keep the people on the mountain safe. He was not allowing the other members to be violent towards them. He ultimately, as we know from the allocution, left the organization for this very reason. And there was no attempt during the sentencing phase, I would suggest, for him to have a chance to really talk about this. All the fact that he, the charter itself, we know from government counsel, was both written in Arabic and English. We have no idea which one Mr. Hapi signed or what he saw. In fact, at the sentencing, he indicated that he had never seen the back charter, that he had only seen the cover sheet. So that should cause pause, it seems to me, because, as I say, the defendant should have had a better opportunity to flesh this out. I see that.
All right, thank you. We'll hear from the government.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court. My name is Chris Ellen Cole. I represent the United States in this matter, and with me at counsel table are the trial attorneys in this case, Greg Maisel and Timothy Reardon. Your Honor, this Court should affirm the 276-month sentence that was imposed upon the appellant in this case. The District Court did not clearly err in finding that a terrorism enhancement was appropriate under Section 3A1.4, and with respect to the remaining claims that are raised in appellant's briefs that were not addressed today, we will rely on our briefs with respect to those unless the Court has further questions about that. Your Honor, under whatever version of 3A1.4 could be applied in this case, the appellant's conduct clearly qualified for this terrorism enhancement.
Just a technical point so I'm clear. If the defendant enters into a plea agreement that says the 1995 sentencing guidelines shall apply, is the court relieved of its obligation to look at any changes that the commission may have adopted?
Your Honor, we are not making that argument, and the reason is this. If the 1995 version of 3A1.4 applies by virtue of the plea agreement, which I think the parties did agree to, appellant's argument, as I understand it, is that the 1995 definition of terrorism changes or is clarified by this 1996 enactment of 3A1.4. So in other words, from appellant's point of view, the 1995 guideline effectively incorporates the 1996 version as well. We don't see any way that could really be so, given the nature of the amendment that did occur in 1996.
So when you enter into a plea agreement that a certain version of the guideline shall apply, the district court, nonetheless, has the responsibility and the guidelines themselves to see if there has been any further clarification?
As a general matter, yes, although I will point one thing out here. The issue of the 1996 guidelines as having clarified the 1995 version, that wasn't even directly raised until the actual sentencing hearing. Mm-hmm. Defense counsel, in terms of their acknowledgement of the pre-sentence report, there was no objection to the pre-sentence report and to that calculation. There was some discussion in the memorandum for sentencing talking about recent changes, but there was never any discussion of this whole issue of whether it's a clarifying amendment or not.
No, I just wanted to understand the government's position.
Yeah, our position
is... But it's not clarifying, that's your...
Our position is there's no question in our view that this is not a clarifying amendment. This is a substantive amendment. And it is intentionally by the Congress and the inaction of the AEDPA to broaden the scope of the government's ability to prosecute terrorism. And that brought into play a wide range of changes to the definition of terrorism. It encompasses a much broader group of defendants across the board. That's not a clarification. A clarification is something where the commission says, this is what we meant when we said this in 1995. That's not what the 1996 amendment is. The 1996 amendment is, gee whiz, we want stronger laws, stronger ability to prosecute terrorists, and so therefore we are going to erase the prior version of this guideline and start from scratch.
But so as I understand it, the government's position is that a plea agreement that says the 1995 guideline shall apply is subject to the guideline provision that requires the district court to see if there has been any clarification.
I think that's a fair statement, Your Honor. Yes, I do.
That's all I was trying to
say. Yes, Judge. I agree with that. And we're not arguing otherwise.
Okay. Can I just get your thinking on an example of some of the six bases for classifying him? Appellant's acknowledgement of the proffer and statements to the hostages themselves. The hostages were taken because of the oppression of Muslims. So, it's got to be such indirect from that.
Well, Judge, I don't know if standing alone that would necessarily be enough, but I think there's an argument it could be, and under both provisions. Under the 1995 provision, it clearly covers actions that are intended to focus on a civilian population, to terrorize or coerce or intimidate a civilian population. Yeah. Right.
But what does that mean? I mean,
to take people from a beach and to tell them that we're taking you at gunpoint with a bazooka and we're taking you because of the oppression of the Muslims, we think fairly falls within the definition of intimidation of a civilian population.
Let's take the first part without the oppression of the Muslims.
Yes.
Just the kidnapping. You aren't trying to turn every kidnapping.
Okay. No, so not you're not
about
so.
About the oppression of the Muslims, and that's because implicitly that is looking to something that will affect the conduct of the government.
Well, under the 1995 version, that is a violent act that is directed to a civilian population, and it's also directed to affect the conduct of government in the sense that it's retaliation, if you will, for what is perceived by this group, the Al-Halakat al-Islamiyah, to have been unfair treatment by the Filipino government against Muslims. And under the 1996 version, that would qualify.
But the rule is forward-looking to influence the policy.
In 1995, it is, Judge. In 1995, it's forward-looking, but in 1996, it's not. In 1996, the language is...
1995.
You got to stick with 95.
Well, in 95, that's fair. That's totally fair. In 1995, I think the intimidation or coercion of the civilian population, standing alone, without any nexus to government policy, is enough. And so the mere statement, we're taking you from a beach, and American citizens among them, in order to intimidate them as a civilian population because of treatment of the Muslims in the Philippines, that qualifies under the 1995 version.
You added intimidate.
Yes.
But that isn't in the final one. Simply, it's taken. It's the reason why they were taken.
It appeared to be intended to coerce or intimidate or coerce a civilian population. Right. Okay. That's true.
The finding is backward-looking and the requirement is forward-looking. It was a disconnect.
I guess that would be true in many of these cases, is that we're trying to look at what the intent was of taking the hostages in the first place. And in the 1995 version, we would submit that language and threatening language to the hostages that were taken would qualify under the 1995 version. But we think even generally, and Your Honor asked the question, well, would any kidnapping be covered? No, that's not the government's position. This is not just any kidnapping. This is a kidnapping that is basically coming down as part of a charter of a terrorist group, and the reason why they're kidnapping people is to get ransom so they can finance terrorist activities. The government put into the record, Your Honor, the charter of which this defendant is a signatory, where they are seeking jihad, seeking to basically install Muslim governments, and this is how they're financing that. This case is, we would submit, very similar to the case there's Hassan, the Fourth Circuit case. There's also a Jayusi, which is an Eleventh Circuit case, both of which are cases where money was being raised or material support given to hostage to terrorist groups, and that was enough to warrant imposition of this sanction. And we think that's the role of the ASG or Al-Halakat here distinguishes this from the ordinary kidnapping. And so this is a different kind of a case.
I'm just suggesting careful articulation by the
yes.
government.
Yes.
That would be very helpful.
Yes, Your Honor. I understood.
Given this man's close connection and preeminent role in the organization, as opposed to a hanger-on, say.
That's correct. I think that's very, very important. And that he clearly subscribes to these goals. He's a signatory to these goals. And I think I know.
I guess I'm just trying to follow up on Judge Williams' point about just because a hanger-on kidnaps somebody and, you know, gets $10,000 and decides to disperse it among a number of organizations.
That would be a harder case. That would be a harder case.
One of which happens to be a terrorist organization.
Well, then right. I think the government would probably have a grounds to pursue it. Yes, I do. Now, that's not this case. I think this mm-hmm. case is much clearer. And I think one of the previous questions was with respect to receiving the ransom and agreeing mm-hmm. to take only part of the ransom in exchange for changes in governmental policy in the Philippines with respect to Muslim citizens. I think that's undisputed that in fact occurred. Helen acknowledged that, more or less. And that, I think, squarely brings this in under either version, the 1995 or the 1996 version. And under the 1995 language, that would be conduct to influence the policy of a government by intimidation or to affect the conduct of government by kidnapping. Both of those, under the 1995 definition of international terrorism, would be met in this case. Your Honor, I didn't get a chance to address my opponent's points. I see my time is probably up, but I did want to ask the court if they wanted me to address any of the particular points. I just would note, in terms of the indictment, many of the statutes to which counsel referred were not even in existence and couldn't be prosecuted by the government with respect to this offense. Many of those did not become extraterritorial until much later than the crimes charged in this case.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Health counsel?
The only thing I will say is both Muhammad and Jayushi had a charge connected to terrorism. And I think Muhammad, it was a narco-terrorism count. And I believe in the Jayushi case, there was a material support count. That does make them different, even though they may not have been available at the time of Mr. Hapey's case. Mm-hmm. If there aren't any further questions, I'll submit on the brief.
Thank you. Take the case under advisement.